Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on what's popular in the swine industry. By listening to Popular Pig, you will receive invaluable information on the latest trends, news, and research from various experts who guide the global pork industry. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com. Popular Pig is also made possible by
the National Pork Board,
Farm Credit Services of America, Johnsonville Foods, Hypor Genetics, Minitube, Orbit Farm Technologies, Brenneman Pork, PIC North America, Swine Robotics, Neogen, Innovative Heating, and PigEquipment.com. Brought to you by American Resources.
Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast. I'm Matthew Roeder, your host, and today we're joined by Jeff Schellenberg. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Matt. How are you?
Great. So you're with Decisive Dividend. You've come on to talk about a lot of different things, but more recently, you guys acquired Innovative Heating Technologies and our friend Chris Grant. How's that going?
It's going awesome. Chris some days lacks energy. No, he doesn't. He's got energy every day. We love interacting with Chris and Matt and the team out at IHG. I was actually up there on Friday and had a chance to speak with their group. And there's such a positive vibe going on around that business with their new facility. A bunch of exciting things, new ownership, a lot of different things happening there. But we're excited about that investment and really appreciate Chris and Matt and the team there for sure.
So are you aware of Matt's dislike for Nickelback as much as we are?
Yeah, I've heard about, actually it was funny because it was Matt's birthday on Friday, and we had kind of three different sessions with all the different employees on different shifts and whatnot at their facility. And we ended up singing happy birthday to him each time. He was mortified at the fact that we were drawing this much attention to him. And yes, I have heard about his hate of Nickelback. But I also know that he is the owner of a snakeskin handled curling broom. So, I think there's a lot of things about Matt that, I learned on this particular trip, including that his birthday is February 16th. So he'll be thrilled that I'm sharing this with the group.
So what is your background? Where did you grow up? How did you get involved in what you do? And let's just start there.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born in northern Alberta in a city called Grand Prairie, Alberta, where my father was a teacher up there, and then he moved to Edmonton when I was pretty young to join a new private school there that he was a teacher of. And so that's where I really grew up, just outside of Edmonton, a place called Sherwood Park, Alberta, kind of a bedroom community of Edmonton. And my dad was the first in his family. Both of my parents, Mennonite farming background, and had gone up to northern Alberta to homestead. The kids and my parents are both from families of 10, so they could go up to northern Alberta and get land, for homesteading, so that the kids could farm, right? And my dad ended up going to university, or the first in his family to go to university, and then moved down to Edmonton. And as part of that, became a teacher. And I would say my father is my hero, because he paved this path of carving a different route but huge background in agriculture and that's what my cousins, I'd go visit them on their in those places, and loved being out on the farm with my cousins for sure growing up as a kid. And then as I grew up, I figured I wanted to do somehow get into business, and that's where I took a kind of a circuitous route through university to get there, partly because I played football and wanted to keep playing football, and so I had to figure out a way to stay in school. And so just start to add on different programs to be able to stay in school, and then eventually found a law MBA route that allowed me to get into a corporate law firm. And I moved out from Edmonton to Toronto, which would be kind of the financial center of Canada, and articled with a law firm there, officially became a lawyer, and left immediately the next day to get onto the business side, where I I became an investment banker that really advised companies on mergers and acquisitions. Was where I spent most of my time.
What size transactions did you typically handle when you were doing that?
Yeah, that was bulge bracket stuff. You know, that was call it 250 to 50 billion, you know, 250 million to 50 billion type of deals. Like so, large deals. Yeah, the biggest deal we worked on in that world still would have been the largest leverage buyout in history. Would have been Bell Canada, a deal that never closed because of the financial crisis. Actually, was a go private transaction for that business. Anyways, we were working with a couple private equity firms on that. But it was fun time of my career. You know, my dream and ambition was to work in an industry where I could, or be part of something where I could read about the deals I was doing on the front page of the business newspaper. And that was the goal. That was like the dream, right? And so that was what I was doing and having a lot of fun. But you know, then my wife and I had our two oldest, and the lure of family, who was all in Western Canada, kind of drew us back to that, where I became involved in the family business for a number of years before I left that and joined Decisive Dividend in what I do now a few years ago. So kind of a bit of a journey from Edmonton to Toronto, back to Edmonton, and then out here to Kelowna, BC, where we're located, which is a beautiful part of the world, kind of Canada's Napa Valley, if you want to call it that. So beautiful, beautiful place to be based, and a great place to run this business for sure.
So what does Decisive Dividend do?
Yeah, so we're an acquisition-oriented company that acquires manufacturing businesses. We have 10 in Canada, headquartered in Canada, one headquartered in the UK. IHT, Innovative Heating Technology, is one of the 10 that we own that's Canadian-based. And, the trend that we're right in front of is an aging demographic trend, which is driving a huge what's known as the largest intergenerational wealth transfer period in history, where people are looking to move the businesses they've created or the wealth they've created to the next generation. And a lot of times with operating companies, the next generation isn't that interested in continuing to run the business, and that creates a really unique opportunity for us. Because of our business model, we become a pretty attractive potential buyer of a business owner, or for the business of a business owner who's facing that decision point. And so that's what we focus on doing. All of the businesses we own are manufacturing or sell manufactured products, and kind of an interesting niche, some real world real cash flow generating businesses that we then also, as a publicly traded company, we trade on the Toronto, the TSX Venture Exchange. And, we're a dividend paying company, and so provide a pretty interesting opportunity for our investors for growth and yield because of the dividend we pay.
So what is it about that model that excites you, the manufacturing supply? Why that area?
Well, because of the dividend paying model that we're in, what we really need is recurring streams of revenue and call it low capital intensity. And manufacturing businesses can provide that. We have a lot of businesses that sell pieces of equipment that need to be replaced regularly. That fits a recurring revenue model, fits a dividend paying model nicely. We have dealer distributed products in our portfolio that manufacture products that sell through a dealer network, and that's a nice source of recurring revenue. And so that really supports the dividend paying model. And manufacturing, for the most part, can be quite low capital intensity. You build a plant, and these assets that you acquire to manufacture are long lived assets that you don't have to keep replacing over and over again. You buy a laser, metal cutting laser or something like that. It can last a long time. And so you don't have to, continually reinvest in the plant. And so that allows us to direct cash flows to our shareholders in the form of a dividend, which is obviously very positive. So that's manufacturing fits the business model really nicely. And, that's even part of what we see in IHT is, there's a replacement cycle for these masks. There's kind of the continued growth and innovation in the industry, people seeking energy efficiency, all of which is driving this change cycle that we think is going to be a great supporter of our dividend paying program in the future as well.
So how did you guys get connected with IHT? Did Chris just show up knocking on your door or what?
No, you know what? We dated them for a while before we acquired the business. So we have our corporate development guy, guy by the name of Tyler Senft, picked up a conversation with Chris through a connection that he had that made an introduction. And over the course of over a year long, call it courtship, kind of in the 18-month type of time frame, we just began to develop a relationship with Chris and spent some more time with him and Matt, and got to know them and hear their story and understand what they were looking for an opportunity, and really, you know, work to convince them that we were the right home for them. Right. Like, I think that was a big part of, you know, us selling them on why we were the right person to be a buyer for their business is what we spent a lot of time on. And so, yeah, no, it's you know, it's a bit unique because, you know, knowing them, it's not like they're at retirement age, right? Like, typically, yeah, our typical vendor is at the stage where they're about to retire and don't see kind of that next generation of their family or whoever being ready or wanting to buy the business. That's typically what we see. Chris and Matt aren't that. You know, what they wanted was a home that you know, they felt that their employees could keep their jobs, that we had a track record of leaving the business in place and allowing it to continue as a going concern, while still, you know, they get to still be involved and drive the growth of the business. And so they thought that really fit what we were doing. What we were doing fit what they were looking for. And so it was through that kind of courtship that we ended up being able to find a way to get a deal done, which we're super thrilled about, for sure.
So I'm actually later going to ask some things about some other industries because I'm curious. But yeah, what was it about Innovative Heating and the swine industry that stood out to you guys? What was it about the deal that was exciting?
Yeah. So, I mean, we look at 100 deals a year probably. And you know, what we're trying to find is businesses that have a sustaining differentiating advantage, something that's unique and different about them that can sustain over time as well. And what we saw with these guys was this kind of core focus on this particular product that they did better than the competitors. And it just so happened that this was in the area of what we were mentioned just before the call started here, but in precision ag, about reducing the overall cost of operating one of these facilities that is so important to any consumer of a product as they look at it, whether it be the pork industry or any other industry. If you can help me, if you can sell me a product that helps me run my business more efficiently, I'd be interested, you know, interested in that. And these guys had that and did it better than their competitors. And so, you know, we looked at that and thought, here we are, we're on in front of this wave of opportunity around, you know, call it precision ag. This is a really interesting place for us to be involved with. It happens to be in the swine industry, you know, and the thing that was so compelling about us was, even through kind of a phase of a more challenged period in the swine industry, these guys were able to grow their business really dramatically because of how good their solution was, how meaningful it was for the customer, how it replaced something that, you know, drove energy efficiency, but also was a benefit to the animals that were using this product. And all the things we worked through, we just got more and more excited about this being a great fit for us. And, you know, to the point where we're like, are you guys, you've got such a great thing going, are you sure you want to sell to us? And, you know, that's where we were able to craft a deal that made sense for them and made sense for us, which is a critical part of getting the deal done, right? Because it takes two to tango. You got to have two people on the dance floor, or else you're dancing by yourself. So yeah, that's what made us excited about this opportunity, particularly, for sure.
I mean, that's a big deal growing in a market that is in its lowest in decades. And yeah, I mean, it's the worst market that it's had in decades. And yeah, when you're growing,
yeah,
it says a lot.
Well, it says a huge amount about the business. Like, it just really clearly stated to us how obvious and how important their product market fit was. They had developed a product that addressed a very specific need in the marketplace that the consumer understood and was willing to invest in, even in the face of everything that was going on in the space. Like, it was actually a really important time, and actually a really encouraging thing for us as we saw it. If you look at, you know, any of the kind of the pork industry trends relative, you know, pricing, you know, pricing, input costs, all that kind of stuff. Everything was going kind of the opposite ways of you'd think of what it should be going. And yet these guys were able to, you know, have the type of success they were having. And so that, yeah, that was, you know, a huge testament to them. And you know, there's like preparation meeting opportunity, right? Like there's guys put in a huge amount of work to prepare themselves to be, you know, put themselves in a position to be able to address the needs that were in the marketplace and do it the way they did it. And so no, kudos to those guys. And the beauty of what we did with the transaction when we bought them is they continue to run the business as they did before. You know, there's huge belief that we have in them and their ability to drive this thing forward. So they get to continue to run it. You know, their employees get to continue to report to Chris and Matt and all those kind of things. So that made for a really good fit. You know, I was actually just on the call with Chris right before this conversation. He said to give you a hard time about, Iowa State or you're a Hawkeye fan, right? Is that right? So he said,
yeah, pretty much.
Bug Matt about that he's just a great guy to be around. So we're thrilled that those are going to be the guys that still have their hands on the wheel driving the business forward, because they did such a great job positioning the business to be successful, even in the face of a challenging market.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, especially with M&A, a lot of people don't have experience in it. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have experience in it, and so it can be kind of scary. But when you bring on a new team, if that team is thriving, it's not too often that you're like, well, we better get rid of this team. Usually if the team, if it's a team that's failing and you're kind of doing a turnaround and
for sure. Well, and I would put on top of that succession planning. You know, oftentimes the leaders of the businesses that are selling to us are doing it because they don't want to work for someone else. They started this business so they didn't have to work for someone else. They don't want to work for me. Like, they want to do work for themselves. So they also recognize they have a great business that they just are not at the stage of life that they're going to be able to carry on.
Right. Yeah.
So managing that transition as they step away, oftentimes so instrumental to the success of the business. You know, navigating that journey is tricky because you can screw up in multiple ways as you walk through that. And that for us is a critical core competency. If we can help businesses navigate leadership change from a founder vendor, you know, someone who is so integral to the overall business. And if we can, you know, work through, I call it like a realignment phase, typically of kind of also introducing the concept to that business that, hey, there might be a different way of operating that actually could be more beneficial, you know, more profitable, all those types of things in the business. Doesn't mean that the old way of doing things is wrong. Just there's a different path. Yeah. And that realignment phase is also, you know, there's all types of potholes and landmines you can step on as you're going through that. But that can really reposition and help realign a business to accelerate growth. A lot of times the businesses we buy are in what I'd call sustained success mode. You know, they've been operating a certain way, you know, they've gone to a very successful level. And for whatever reason, the vendor of that business, you know, hasn't been willing to take kind of that next risk, let's call it, to push the business to maximize its potential. And I'd say that's oftentimes age-adjusted risk appetite, right? It's, you get to a certain age and stage of your life, you're like, really, am I going to double down here to try to, you know, drive this forward? Like, I don't know if I'm going to be around. I don't know if I want to be around to wait for the period that I'm going to earn my return on this investment. I'm just going to hold off on doing that. Right. And that's part of the excitement of stepping into those types of businesses. We navigate leadership change in that type of context as well, which we've had some really exciting, you know, really great success around doing that. We've definitely stubbed our toe and haven't done things perfectly as well. So, if you don't have to navigate that, like, and which is the case exactly with Chris and Matt, that's one change that a business doesn't have to go through, and change always introduces risk.
What, to throw it back at Chris, since he wanted you to give me crap about Iowa State, and you're going through this process, it's tough.
Yeah.
What did Matt and Chris ever surprise you or catch you off guard or impress you in a unique way that you're just kind of taken aback by?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say taken aback, but what I actually really appreciated about them was their concern and diligence around ensuring that we were the right buyer for the business. You know, they invested a huge amount of energy talking to other people who had sold businesses to us, talking to people who are running the businesses that had been sold to us. You know, I think their level of diligence around making sure we were the right buyer was, I think, the highest I've seen. You know, we've done six acquisitions since I arrived here, and they were really steadfast in ensuring that they understood what they were getting into, and making sure we were the right people to sell their business to. Which I don't know if that surprised me, I think it is evidence of their care for the business, their care for their employees, right? Like wanting to make sure that we weren't going to be like a lot of traditional private equity players, which we're not, come in, you know, buy a business like this, step into it, rip and tear, and kind of impose their will on it to try to make it better or whatever, and then look to exit that in the next 3 to 5 years, sell it to whomever. And you know, that's not our model. Like we talk about our model being, we really focus on what we call exiting legacy-minded business owners who want to see their employees keep their job, who want to stay, you know, have the business remain in the community it operates in, so they can walk down the street in that community kind of holding their head high. They can sell their employees out or, you know, something like that, right? So, you know, that's not who we are. But Matt and Chris really took the time to make sure they understand that, and not just to hear it from us and say, well, that's your marketing spiel. No, like they talk to the people who walked this journey before and really dig in. So that definitely made them, lots of people do that type of work, but these guys, the extent that they did was impressive.
And it was fascinating too, because after the deal, Chris, like, did you see the news? And I'm like, well, which news? Like world news or like pig news? Yeah. Like, oh, pig news, man. And I see it, and he's like, then he calls me, and he wasn't like, oh my goodness, like this is the deal, or he was like, you'd be amazed if you knew more about the company we get to work with. Like they don't just buy stuff and dump it. Like they keep it and they hold it. And I think he was like, I don't think they'd ever sold a business. And he was just so excited about what it meant to be a part of your guys' group. It was so cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. And that's just it. We've never sold a business. We've been operating since 2012 was when it was founded, did our first acquisition in 2015. So now we have an 8-9 year track record, right? And we don't buy businesses to sell them. And that's the confidence we can give an owner when we're talking to them, is like we are a safe set of hands for your business. We will carry it on. We will, you know, part of why I was out there on Friday was talking to their employees about our employee share purchase plan. You know, we have a tremendously attractive employee share purchase plan where their employees can buy into Decisive Dividend. They can be an owner of the business that they work in. We have a matching share program that they get, you know, some free shares when they buy shares themselves. And that there's a retention element to that for sure, but it creates this type of incentive to save and take care of their financial futures in a way that they wouldn't have access to in a traditional private company. And so we can, you know, and talking to their employees about it, they had tons of questions the first year they're going to be able to participate, but it was so cool to see how keen they are and how many of our employees across our different groups are to be owners of the business they work in. And that's what I say to them, like, look, you know, you show up to work and work hard every day, right? Like, and no matter what you do, like, you can have an impact on our financial results. We're publicly traded. You can go online and look at the stock price at any moment in time. And the work you're doing drives the success and profitability of IHT, which drives the profitability of Decisive. So why do that for someone else, right? Why do it for the other guy who's a shareholder? You know, become a shareholder and do it for yourself. And so we have great buy-in and participation in that. I'm optimistic about the level of participation the IHT guys will have this year too. We're just wrapping up the program for this year. And so that's a cool thing that they can be part of and kind of with the security that we're in it for the long term, right? That they can be part of this group of companies for the long term. So I'm, you know, we're excited too. Like, I think we got a great model that just, you know, when I'm talking to vendors about what we do, it's not like I feel like I'm selling them on something. It's not a sales pitch so much. It is we just provide a different alternative. You know, like you're facing a decision about how is this business going to carry on? I got a great business here. What am I going to do with this? And you got options. I'm just telling you, we're an option that looks a little bit different than a lot of other options. and we have a track record to prove it out. And so that's really, really meaningful. And then as you layer in, I say with the vendors of businesses, where I'm trying to create apostles. You know, I want people, those vendors, to go out and then preach the good news to other people about what we're doing, so other people want to be part of the program too, right? So I don't know if Chris and Matt are that keen on being apostles, but that's, you know, maybe they'll that's what I'm trying to create here.
Do you see yourself doing more in the swine industry or evolving your model in the future?
Yeah, you know what? One of our biggest focuses right now, we really like the areas of the businesses that we're, the types of businesses we're in, and we can talk more about that too, but we want to add in areas we're already invested in, because we think that the expertise we're building within the businesses that we have de-risks any future transaction if we make it. Like, here we are, we invest in spaces, we learn some tough lessons, we have some wins, we have some losses, all that kind of stuff, but yeah, to be able to leverage off those wins and losses to then layer the next business into the mix and have companies work together. We have some great stories about how our different businesses in our portfolio work together to create, you know, make the whole greater than the sum of the parts, so to speak. And I think the easiest way to do that is to have other businesses that manufacture other similar types of products or sell different types of products to the same customer. And so, yeah, if we can, invest in a space like the pork industry as an example, or hearth industry, where some of our other businesses are, wear parts industry, where we have a bunch of businesses, other types of agriculture. Yeah, we're keen to do that because we think that, is a real potential benefit to our shareholders, not because we're going to carve a bunch of costs out of it. Each business operates in a standalone basis. All the businesses we owned are decentralized. They have their own leadership teams, just like IHT does. But it's amazing how when you have those kind of entrepreneurially minded leaders of businesses, how they're keen to work together to find ways to make their businesses better. And we see the huge potential in investing in similar industries or other businesses in similar industries, so they can work together around that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. Well, so I've got some random questions for you, like rapid fire questions.
Yes.
Pretty easy. But before I do, I got another one with IHT.
Yeah.
Is there, when you got to know that business, were there any quirky cultural elements to IHT that are unique? I feel like every culture has a couple quirks that make them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did IHT have any that really popped out to you?
You know, for me, it was, I would call it almost their resourcefulness. Like, have you ever been up to tour their facility?
I haven't.
Oh, no, well, you'll have to do it at some point. Well, you won't get the benefit of their previous facility, but their previous facility was so tight. And in the way they operated, it was almost like, you know, Jenga of stacked, you know, layers of different types of manufacturing. And you came in there and people are on top of each other and they're working, but they're finding a way to make it work, right? The office space was the same thing. Like, they were shoehorned into this spot and yet they made a way of making it, you know, really successful and growing dramatically in a facility where they just kind of kept layering on top of each other. Like, they didn't have bunk desks, but it was almost close, right? So that was that resourcefulness was really cool. I mean, the other thing that was very cool about it was, you know, the quality of the employees that they were able to hire. You know, they, a huge amount of like immigrant workforce in that business. You know, immigration is a real focus of the Canadian government, and they tapped into that, or their, you know, people they would hire would bring over their friends. And so you have some really high skilled, you know, engineering technologists and that type of thing that were plugging into different roles, but then kind of grew through the ranks into different types of roles. That leveraged more fully off of the skill set that they had and the education and background and all that kind of stuff. And so that was really cool to see too. So yeah, a few things that were that I absolutely noticed like that when we were kind of walking through that transaction and diligence process and learning more about them.
So first rapid fire question.
Yeah.
If you had a cut of pork, what would it be? What's your favorite pork dish?
Without question. Well, geez, I bacon and pork chops. I love a barbecued pork chop. It's delightful. Yeah.
What is your go-to karaoke song if you had to sing karaoke?
Well, I may or may not have. It's either going to be a Neil Diamond song or Sweet Child of Mine.
There you go. I was really hoping you would have picked a Nickelback song, to be honest.
That would have been way funnier. I should have thought of that. No.
Pick rock star.
Photograph by Nickelback.
There you go. No doubt. That one, there you go. If you could go back in time and have dinner or a beer with any historical figure, who would it be?
Well, Jesus or Abraham Lincoln.
Okay. Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people don't say Jesus. I think they get so caught up in history, they get right to like American history or like Western Civ, and then they skip the Bible entirely. Yeah. It was funny. Somebody once said, I bet this is cliche, but Jesus. And I'm like, you'd be surprised. Like, people would just go right to like the last 100 years. That's awesome. If what's on your bucket list for travel?
I was talking about it earlier today. I'm really keen to go to Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right up there.
It's on up there. That's up there for me too. Just how many people are in one spot, yet how well they make it work, and then how just serene the whole country is at the same time. Like, that has to be
clean and safe. And my oldest boy, I've said this to him, you know, Tokyo's on the bucket list, and he's like, we're going to go there. We got to do Japan, like the powder snow. He's a big skier. So Japan is on that bucket list too. So I got to make it happen.
What's the favorite place you've ever traveled before? It's always harder than the bucket list.
Yeah. Yeah. We love Hawaii. You know, we have, my wife's folks have a place out there, and we go visit them. And so there's that kind of special family connection thing too, and some great memories there. So that's a favorite. We love Hawaii.
Which island are they on?
We typically go to Oahu. Yeah. There's a place just on the southwest corner of Oahu called Ko'olina. That's a pretty spectacular spot that we like to go to.
That's awesome. Last question. What is a golden nugget you'd have for listeners? A bit of life wisdom you've picked up along the way that you could share back.
You know, I worked with a guy pretty closely for a number of years who had all types of pithy wisdom that he would give me. And I remember one particular story. We were talking about, you know, transitions in life and changes. And you know, his comment to me was, you know, like there was a person that we were working with that had changed, you know, from a different spot to this spot, a place where they were very successful, but moved over because they thought the opportunity was better, ended up not working on it, and they left. And we had been working together with that person. He asked where they was, and I'd said he had left. And he said, you know, that just goes to show the best place to succeed is where you are. And it was just a little line. As soon as you said that, that kind of came to my head. Like, I think it's oftentimes, you know, we're looking for the grass is greener on the other side, but you know, so much of what we have is right in front of us. Right. So the best place to succeed is where you are. There you go.
That is awesome. And I appreciate you being a guest on the Popular Pig podcast and sharing the story with us. And I hope you guys continue to have success as you move forward. Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for reaching out and making this happen. It was a pleasure to meet you, Matt, and chat with you. So, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Popular Pig. We aspire to learn and grow together through the experience and wisdom shared by our esteemed guests. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues within the swine industry. For more information, please go to popularpig.com to receive updates when new episodes are available. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com.